Wednesday, January 20th, 2016. You are listening to the Daily Dose Sports Podcast, and I am your host, Clint Daly, sports writer from Denver, Colorado. Hey, you know, we release a new podcast every single week. It comes out on Wednesdays right around noon Mountain Standard Time. And we try to bring you, a little bit of an insightful look, a little bit of a sarcastic look, a little bit of a common sense look at the world of sports. I know common sense actually isn't that common. You can subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, pretty much anywhere that podcasts are hosted. Or if you want to, you can head over to the Daily Dose website. We post a link to the podcast there every single week as well, if you would like to just go there and listen to it. We also post a few articles. Had an article go up this week that I would encourage you to go over and check out. For some reason, it is blowing up in the world of sport, social media, but you might want to go check out an article that I had written about LeBron James. Getting a lot of national attention, getting a lot of world attention. Doing well over on the website. Check out our website. It is Daily Dose Sports, D-A-L-Y, dailydosesports.wordpress.com. And like I said, there is a link to the podcast there every single week. If you've got a question, if you've got a comment, if you would like to contact the show for any reason, well, wait a second. Unless it's like a legal concern. If you have like a legal concern or you've got like a lawsuit or something like that, let me give you my email address. Go to Hillary Clinton for President. That is the number 4. Hillary, H-I-L-L, HillaryClintonForPresident.com. If it's not a legal question, if you've got a comment about the show, if you've got a question about the podcast, if you've got a question about any of the articles, you can email us at DailyDoseSports@gmail.com. We'd love to hear from you there. Again, legal goes over there. It's a little different format. Legal questions go over there. And then, you know, the podcast questions, actually, dailydosesports@gmail.com. You can also follow us on Twitter. You can like us on Facebook, whatever you'd like to do. Both of those handles there are at Daily Dose Sports, D-A-L-Y, Daily Dose Sports. We try to spice up your feeds just a little bit on both of those. And you can find those at Daily Dose Sports. This week, a couple things coming up on the show. College football's over. College football is over, which is sad, which is really sad. But we're going to hand out a few postseason college football awards. You know how college football people, you'll hear them say, you'll hear college football people say, I wish we could hand out like the Heisman and some of these awards after the bowl games. After the bowl games. We'd like to do it after the bowl games. Well, here at the Daily Dose, we can do whatever we want. I mean, we can hand out college football awards in June if we want to. I mean, we wouldn't want to because that wouldn't be kind of stupid, but we could. We could do it whenever we want. We wait till after the bowl games are finished and then we hand out our awards to make sure that we get them to the right people. Isn't that the point? We're trying to get these awards to the right people. You don't sit there and say, well, we're going to call it at midseason. If you'd have handed out the Heisman at midseason, you'd have given it to Leonard Fournette. He was hardly the most outstanding player as the season went on, though. We tried to get it right. That's the bottom line. Also, going to talk a little bit of NBA today. There are a few stories I would like to touch on. And a couple teams have a rooting interest that you might not be aware of. Want to talk about that a little bit. And of course, we've got to recap the NFL divisional playoffs and preview the conference championship games that are coming up this weekend. Should be some very, very entertaining games to keep an eye on this weekend. Do not want to miss that. And of course, as we do every single week, we have to have our Daily Dose Top 5, always a popular segment here. You never quite know where the Daily Dose Top 5 is going to go. It goes a number of different directions. Got a good one for you today you're going to want to stick around for. Hey, happy belated MLK Day, Martin Luther King's birthday, Monday, at least that's the day that we celebrate that day. I hope that you had a chance to reflect on some of the work that was done, you know, the civil rights movement, the equality, that kind of thing. Hopefully you got an opportunity to kind of reflect on some of those things. It is all about equality. It is all about treating people the way you would want to be treated. I know we get a little sarcastic here on the Daily Dose. Bottom line, treat people the way you would want to be treated. Is it that difficult? Okay, let's jump in because we got some breaking news that I want to get to. First off, the Denver Broncos kind of getting lured into some trash talk with the New England Patriots here. There was some Twitter stuff going back and forth with tight end Rob Gronkowski. And then, now, I'm going to be honest, it feels like the media kind of fed this story and they kind of made this a story because defensive lineman for the Broncos, Antonio Smith, said that he believes it's fair to call 4-time Super Bowl champion New England Patriot quarterback Tom Brady a crybaby. Now, here's the problem. Here's the problem with this whole story, and you're going to hear this story today. You're going to hear that, hey, they're calling him a crybaby. Okay, first off, let's stop acting like Tom Brady is just above reproach. You can't ever say anything bad about him because, oh, you know, the heavens will part and lightning will come down. It's okay to call Tom Brady a crybaby. He does cry about every single call. Every single time someone touches him, he's looking at a ref. There was a game a few years back when someone whiffed at him. They got close to him and he looked to the ref for a penalty. So it's okay to call him a crybaby. I don't have a problem with that. Here's the problem that I have with this story. The statement from Antonio Smith says that would be an accurate statement. I've never seen any quarterback look to the referee right after he gets sacked more than Tom Brady. That's what he told reporters on Monday. Now, wait a second. That would be an accurate statement. Notice he didn't come out and say Tom Brady is a crybaby. He said that would be an accurate statement, which means that reporters are saying to him, they're feeding him, would you say Tom Brady's a crybaby? That would be an accurate statement. Do you see the difference there? It's not like he just came out and said, hey, so everybody knows Tom Brady's a big crybaby. No, the media is drumming this up. The media is creating this. Don't buy into this. And you know what? He is a crybaby. I'm not saying he's not a great player. I'm not saying he's not one of the greatest quarterbacks ever. Don't get me started on he's the greatest quarterback ever. He's one of the greatest quarterbacks ever. But yeah, he cries. He whines about every single play that happens. You might have seen the Duke men's basketball team lose to Syracuse on Monday night. Here's another story that's a non-story. See, sometimes we gotta bring some common sense on the Daily Dose. Duke gets beat by Syracuse on Monday night, 64-62. And after the game, Mike Krzyzewski, coach of the Duke Blue Devils, is walking through the line. He's walking through the line, shaking hands with the Syracuse players. And he misses a couple players. Like, you can see in the replay, his attention is distracted. He looks up toward the stands, and he doesn't shake a few guys' players. So what does the media say? Mike Krzyzewski is avoiding shaking hands. He's bitter because Duke has lost three in a row, two of them at home. Now, does Duke have their own issues? Yes. Still don't like their point guard play. They still struggle at times. I don't like everything about Duke just yet. They've got some problems, and I don't know if they can fix them. We'll see. Krzyzewski's usually pretty good at turning this around. But if you look at what he does, he's looking up in the stands at some Duke fans that are yelling at the Syracuse players. It's a distraction thing. This doesn't have anything to do with him one-upping Syracuse players or Syracuse coaches or anything like that. Stop it with this. Some of these stories, media, stop getting on these stories. These aren't stories. Dumb. You might have seen the New Orleans Pelicans last night found a way to beat Minnesota 114-99, but they lost Eric Gordon to a fractured ring finger on his shooting hand. Now, you get that fractured ring finger on the offhand, not nearly as big of a deal, but to get it on the shooting hand might hurt. Now, the Pelicans are sitting at 14-27, so they've got a long climb to go. Kind of playing a little bit better, I guess, as of late, but if you have Eric Gordon on the shelf for a while, that's going to hurt the Pelicans even more as they try to dig their way out of that hole. Here's a story I've got for you. You might have missed this one. I want to talk about this one for a minute. Did you see recently the Wisconsin Interscholastic Athletic Association has sent an email to all high school athletic directors in Wisconsin with a list of cheers that have been deemed contrary to good sportsmanship? Here's what the statement says. Here's what the letter says. These cheers are clearly intended to taunt or disrespect. Therefore, the following chants have been banned in Wisconsin high school athletics. They're banning certain chants at high school athletics, whether it's basketball, football, baseball, whatever it might be. Here are the chants that have been banned. I want you to think about this as I'm reading this to you. Here are some of the chants that have been banned. You can no longer chant fundamentals. Can't do that anymore. Team comes down. Maybe it's a traveling turnover, double dribble turnover. Can't chant fundamentals. Civ. A lot of hockey fans, especially, they'll chant at the goalie. They'll say, Civ, 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 Civ. No longer can do that. The we can't hear you. We can't hear you. No longer is allowed in Wisconsin high school athletics. Air ball. Airball, no longer allowed in Wisconsin high school athletics. You can't do that. You can't do that, whatever it might be. There's a net there. There's a net there. And the final one is season's over. You can't chant that anymore when you take a team out of the playoffs or whatever. Okay, a few things. Few thoughts I have on this. First off, who says there's a net there? Is that a thing? Are people chanting there's a net there? What possible use could that have? Is that a tennis chant? I don't know what that means. Are people tripping over the net and you're telling them there's a net? I don't know what that means. If anyone out there, if any of my listeners know how or when that is used, can you please let me know? Because I don't know. I'm not even joking. I'm dead serious. Email me. DailyToSports@gmail.com. I don't know what that means. There's a net there? I don't know if is that a lacrosse thing? Are people tripping over the net and they say there's a net there? Hockey? I can't imagine how that would be used in hockey. I mean, if I hit the net with the puck, then I scored, right? So I'm not gonna chant that. I don't understand what that means. Okay, beyond that, let's get past that one. I realize that we're living in a politically correct era. I know that. I know that we're raising a generation of children that get a hug for literally every single thing they do in life. Hey, you got an F? Let me have a hug. Hey, you pooped your pants? Let me have a hug. I get it. I understand it. But is chanting airball at them if they shoot an airball really a bad thing? Let me tell you, as a coach, because I've told you before, I coached for a number of years at the high school level. As a coach, I'm going to be honest with you. I want you to chant airball if my kid shoots an airball. I'm okay with that. You know what? Sometimes in life, we fail. And if we do, I guarantee there are going to be people in your life that are going to remind you that you have failed. That's okay. Stop making our kids soft. It's all right if you fail. I can't tell you how many players that I've had as a coach that have shot the air ball. Everybody's chanting air ball at them, and they come back and they say, "Coach, I'm lighting them up." And they bang two threes to win the game, or they hit the free throws that win the game. It's okay to use that stuff as motivation. It's okay if you fail to get reminded. It's all right to have somebody chant at you. Are we going to all be quiet when everybody's shooting free throws? Is that what we're coming to? Are we going to have to change our chance to, I'd really prefer if you'd miss this shot. I mean, I'm okay if you don't miss this shot, but I would prefer if you did. Seriously? Can we start making our kids a little bit tougher? It's pathetic. I'm not joking. You can go look this up. Wisconsin is mandating you can't chant these things anymore. Insane. Insane. Okay, we got to jump in because we got a lot of things that we got to get to today. First off, let's talk a little bit about the NBA. Speaking of the media screwing things up as they usually do, you might have seen that ESPN recently released their NBA top 100. And what they did in their top 100 is they basically ranked the top 20 at each position. So who are the top 20 centers of all time? Who are the top 20 power forwards of all time? I want to read through these lists because, as usual, the media creating these lists. And I know you might be sitting there going, but aren't you media? You write? You have a podcast? You do some of this? No. I'm media-ish. I'm not media. As usual, we got to correct a few things. Okay, just watch. You'll see what I'm saying. Look at the top five centers that they created. Number one, on the best centers of all time, they have number one, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. Absolutely agree with that. I'm totally fine with that. Number two, Wilt Chamberlain. Number three, Bill Russell. Wait a second. Bill Russell beat Wilt Chamberlain every time they played each other. Okay. Number four, Shaquille O'Neal. Number five, Hakeem Olajuwon. I'm okay with most. I'm putting Russell ahead of Wilt. I'm sorry. Rings over blings. I don't know. I can't do that. Power forwards. Number one, they have all-time power forwards, Tim Duncan. Again, list by ESPN. Number two, Karl Malone. Yeah, I guess I'm okay with that. Number three, Dirk Nowitzki. Number four, Charles Barkley. Number five, Kevin Garnett. Now, I'm putting Barkley right up there, right around Karl Malone level. And you can sit there and you can say, yeah, but Barkley didn't guard anybody. Okay, I get that. who's going to guard him? Because I saw too many times Barkley go out and drop 40 and 20 on people. So you can sit there and say, well, he didn't guard anybody. That's phenomenal. Who are you going to guard him with? Because you can't guard him either. That's like these people that say, you know, Steph Curry can't guard anybody, or Larry Bird can't guard anybody. That's great. You can't guard them either. And you know what? They're probably going to outdo you at the other end. So I would move Barkley up that list. Dirk can't guard anybody either. Who are we kidding? Are we really going to act like we're putting Dirk up there for his defense? Get out of here with that nonsense. Barkley could do it all. Small forwards. LeBron at number one. Larry Bird at number two. I'm sorry. No. And I'm not a Celtics guy. I'm not a Larry Bird was clutch. Larry Bird was clutch. The clutchest of clutch. You can't have a guy that refuses to take the big shot ahead of the guy who not only took the big shot, buried the big shot in your eye, and told you about it before and after. No, Bird's got to be above that. Number three, Dr. J. I'm okay with Julius. Julius, he's right there at number three. Number four, Kevin Durant. Really? You sure? Number five, Elgin Baylor. Okay, wait a second. You've got Kevin Durant above Elgin Baylor? No. And don't give me the, well, look at the three-pointers. They didn't have the three-point shot. Elgin Baylor would have shot the three. Get out of here. When we're comparing eras, just for the record, and I've said this before on the show, when you're comparing eras, you have to compare apples with apples. You can't just say, well, look at his three-pointers versus Kevin Durant's today. Well, okay, let's put Kevin Durant back there when they could hit you with a folding chair and it wasn't a foul. Get out of here. Shooting guard. Number one, Michael Jordan, of course. Number two, Kobe Bryant. Okay. Number three, Jerry West. Hey, Jerry West was really, really good. Number four, Dwayne Wade. Number five, Clyde Drexler. Number six, Allen Iverson. I got news for you. Allen Iverson would put the fear of God into you like, I don't know, I might put him above Wade and Clyde. I don't know. Iverson was really, really good. I know he was less than 6 foot. That dude was a freak, though. Last category I want to talk about is the point guard. The point guard category, we're going to have to talk about that. Number one, Magic Johnson. I've told you before, if I'm picking teams and I'm picking my point guard, I'm picking Magic. His vision, his size, his ability, his leadership, Magic is the guy. Number two, Oscar Robertson. Maybe. Could do it all. Utility guy. I like Oscar. Number three, John Stockton. I might put Stockton ahead of Oscar. Number four, Steph Curry. Steph Curry? What's he been in the league? 3 years? Are we seriously going to put him on there? Do you want to put Emmanuel Mudiay on the list too? Get out of here. I love Steph. I think Steph Curry is phenomenal. You can't have him on the greatest ever already, because here's number five. So Steph is number four. Here's number five, Isaiah freaking Thomas. Are you serious? Are you really going to put Steph above Zeke? Isaiah Thomas did it for years. You can't put up your 4 or 5 year career against what Isaiah did for 15 years, the championships that he won, the way that he took a garbage Pistons team and made them a champion. No. I love Steph. You can't be there. Once again, ESPN. My goodness. Can you ever get anything right? You're like the NCAA half the time. So dumb. Anyway, speaking of Steph Curry, Golden State crushed the Cleveland Cavaliers on Monday night in Cleveland. That game was a 50-point game. I know you might look at that and you go, oh, yeah, that was a 30-point game. No, it wasn't. That was like a 50-point game. Here's the thing I want to talk about, though. Remember back in the finals last year, and we kept hearing again and again and again, oh man, Cleveland just wasn't healthy. Cleveland just didn't have their people. I mean, if they would have had Kyrie and K Love and Shumpert was, you know, 100%, and they had all their guys. Well, the other night, I mean, if that would have been the case, Golden State wouldn't have stood the chance. The other night, they had those guys. So now what? Because Cleveland had everyone, and if the Warriors wanted to, they could have won by 50. If they hadn't taken their foot off the throttle, they'd have beat them by 50. Here's the problem for so many teams. When you are playing Golden State, everybody goes out and they plays Golden State and they're, okay, we're matched up. We got our man. We know who we have. We know our adjustments. We know our rotations. We're good. And then Golden State puts like Draymond Green or somebody at center and they go all small ball. So now we've got a bunch of guards. We've got a bunch of threes and fours out there running around. And no one in this league can defend them when they play small ball. Just matchups. I can't hang with you. And you can sit there and say, well, we'll go big and we'll pound it inside. Well, you better hit everything because they're going to. And also keep in mind, you're probably going to be trading twos for threes. So you can do it if you want to, but they are running folks out the gym when they go small ball. Just can't defend them. Just can't defend them. Can't find people. Can't stay with their shooters. They're too elusive. They move too much. They use screens too well. They read screens too well. Very, very difficult to hang with that small ball group that they put out there when they do. Now, as good as Golden State is playing, and I mean, they are now 38-4 with 40 games left. I don't think they're going to hit the 70 mark. I know there was talk maybe they could get to the 70 or the 72 or whatever. I don't think they can do that. But they have been historic this year. 38-4? Are you kidding me? As good as they've been. You know who loves Golden State right now? The San Antonio Spurs. Because do you realize the Spurs are 36-6 and no one's saying a word about them. Just the way Greg Popovich likes it. He doesn't want anybody talking about him. Nobody's saying anything about San Antonio. All the attention's going on Golden State. Still a lot of attention on LeBron and Cleveland. Nobody's talking about the Spurs. He loves it. I will say this, though. No one is rooting harder for San Antonio than the Cleveland Cavaliers and the Los Angeles Clippers. Because here's the thing. They can actually match up better with the Spurs than they can with Golden State. I don't mean that they're looking at this like Cleveland is looking at the Spurs saying, boy, I sure wish we'd get Cleveland, or I sure wish we'd get San Antonio in the finals. That's not the case. I think San Antonio, they'd have their hands full. But they sure could match up with them a whole lot better. They can't match up with Golden State. The Los Angeles Clippers are saying the same thing. I'd sure rather see the Spurs. We knocked the Spurs out of the playoffs last year. I don't want to see anything to do with Golden State. We just don't match up with them very well. Not sure if they can beat the Spurs, but it sure seems like they can't beat the Warriors right now. That's going to be fun to just watch the NBA as it kind of goes into the heated part of the season, seeing which teams start to pick up, which teams start to pick it up, which teams start to fall back. When you look at the NBA, how many teams can really win it all? What are there, four? Maybe? Golden State, San Antonio, Cleveland. I'll throw Oklahoma City in there. I guess if the Clippers somehow got like a brain transplant, maybe I'd throw them in there. Five, maybe? I'd say there's five teams that legitimately actually have a shot at winning anything this year in the NBA. But it'll be fun to keep an eye on. Let's talk some college football, because college football is now over. It's now, I feel like we should be playing like Boys to Men, End of the Road. Should I cue that up? I don't feel like queuing that up. College football is now over. Alabama beat Clemson in a very, very good national championship game. But before we say goodbye to college football, here's why I'd play some music for you, but I'm not going to. Until next summer, because we got a long, long time off from college football. And I love college football. We've talked about it before. I love college football. I love the excitement. I love the passion of the fans. The game itself is so, so exciting. It's a little bit more of a wide open, exciting game sometimes than the NFL is. I love college football. But as we say goodbye to college football right now, we need to hand out a few postseason awards. So like I said, we have the benefit of being able to wait until after the season. We have the benefit of being able to watch all the bowl games, see how guys perform in the biggest of games. Let's hand out a few Daily Dose awards. Our first award, the Daily Dose Heisman Award. I told you before, I said it before, and it hasn't changed. If I had a Heisman vote, it would go to Stanford running back Christian McCaffrey. Let me read some stats for you, for Christian McCaffrey. Dude rushed for 2,019 yards and 8 touchdowns. Okay, it's not bad. Caught 45 passes for 645 yards and another 5 touchdowns. He had one kickoff return for a touchdown. He had one punt return for a touchdown. And he actually threw for 2 touchdowns. Tell me who could be more outstanding than what Christian McCaffrey did. I like Derrick Henry. I think he's a beast. I think he's a big, strong kid. Christian McCaffrey's most outstanding player in college football. I will give my award to him. The Daily Dose Coach of the Year. Coach of the Year is always kind of tough. Because there's a few different ways we can go with this. Hey, Alabama's Nick Saban won it all. He won the whole thing. What can you say about Nick Saban? They had that early season loss to Mississippi. He finds a way to rally the troops, gets them playing their best down the stretch, and they roll through the second half of the schedule. You know, they win the national championship. They're right there. But let's be honest. Alabama has the best players. He should have them there. I mean, they have all the top recruits. They have all the five-star guys. Everybody wants to go to Alabama. So, yeah, good job. I'm not going to take anything away from the job that Nick Saban did, but you're kind of doing what you should have done. Who else could we give it to? We could give it to Bob Stoops. Bob Stoops got Oklahoma to rebound. Speaking of teams rebounding, I mean, they lost to Texas, and somehow he still generated, you know, enough from that group to get to the college football playoff. Okay. So we saw what happened in the college football playoff, and in that second half, they got run off the field by Clemson, but still, pretty good job by Bob Stoops. He's in the conversation. You know, we all kind of thought Iowa's Kirk Ferentz was probably washed up. I mean, no one was expecting anything from Iowa. And it seems like every 10 years, he finally gets that class of, like, you know, 40 sixth-year seniors, and they put together a great season. Iowa went 12-0 this year. They get to the Big 10, you know, championship game. They lose a heartbreaker, and I mean a heartbreaker. On the final play of the game, they lose to Michigan State. So great job by Kirk Ferentz. But, yeah, I can't give it to you either because I saw that Rose Bowl. And that Rose Bowl, when Stanford was just running up and down and up and down the field on you, kind of had to look like maybe your guys quit. Like everything we had went into that Michigan State game, and after that, we don't care. So, yeah, I'm probably not going to give it to him. I guess I'm going to have to give it to Clemson's little Dabo Sweeney. I doubted Clemson all year. But Dabo just kept dancing and yapping and dabbing and all the way to the national championship game. And I know they lost the national championship game, but they gave Alabama all they wanted. Think about this. Before this season, Clemson was a verb. If you screw something up, you're Clemsoning it. He changed that. Way to go, Dabo. I mean, it was always, yes, but when they get in the big game, Clemson's going to find a way to lose. When they get in the big game, Clemson will Clemson it. He kind of changed that this year. So I'm going to give it to Dabo Sweeney. I'm giving it to Dabo Sweeney, and we'll go back to using Clemson as a verb again next year. Couple other awards we got to hand out. Couple of Daily Dose awards we got to hand out. The Dan Hawkins Award. If you don't know what the Dan Hawkins Award is, this is the award for the coach that is coaching at a smaller college, and he, you know, kind of takes that and does well enough at the small college to transfer that into a big contract with a big college. Last year, for instance, Jim McElwain, he was okay at Colorado State. He went down to Florida, got the big contract, and he did okay at Florida. I still have a couple doubts about Jim McElwain at Florida, but he was our winner last year for the Dan Hawkins Award. He transferred somehow the Colorado State job into the Florida job. Hey, good for you. Now, this could easily go to Will Muschamp, who somehow, speaking of spin jobs, Will Muschamp somehow took being the defensive coordinator at Auburn and being horrible into being the head coach at South Carolina. Like, they looked at the resume. They were like, let's see, you haven't won anything. Your defense hasn't looked very good this year. Auburn's defense has looked horrible, and you haven't done anything. Yeah, we'll give you the job. I don't know what he says in those interviews, but, man, he must be good. He must be good in those interviews. So we could give it to him. And here's the thing. If you don't know, Will Muschamp is going to build a phenomenal defense at South Carolina and a god-awful offense because that's just what he does. But I'm actually going to give this award to Memphis coach Justin Fuente, who is now, if you didn't know, he was at Memphis, had a pretty good, you know, season with them. He has now taken over for Frank Beamer at Virginia Tech. I'm going to tell you this right now. That Virginia Tech job is not an easy job. I know Beamer made it look that way. That's not an easy job. Keep in mind, Virginia Tech has never been anything until Frank Beamer got there. There is a chance. There is a chance they could go back to that. I like Justin Fuente. I like some of the things he does. I liked watching Memphis this year. But don't think, oh, well, he's just coming on board at a factory, and they just, and that's not what Virginia Tech is. He's going to have a tough job. We'll keep an eye on him. The Jamarcus Russell Award. the Jamarcus Russell Award. That is for the player that is probably a little bit overrated and also has a chance to get fat. Because we kind of mix that in. Overrated, yes. Also chance to swell up like a balloon. Oh, okay, there's the winner. And this could go to a few guys, but I want you to think about this. Now, I'm telling you this right now. I'm not cheering for this. I'm not hoping for this. I'm just telling you it might happen. Alabama running back Derrick Henry. Yes, he's a beast. He's 6'3 and 238 pounds, and he runs like a man. He plows through people. He is strong. And you know, that Clemson-Alabama game, as good of a game as that was, and as much as we like some of the things we saw from Deshaun Watson, Derrick Henry was phenomenal. He looked great in that game. He looked every bit worth whoever's going to go get him and draft him and pay him. Just think of this. Past Bama running backs, you know, Glenn Coffey, Trent Richardson, Eddie Lacy. Eddie Lacy, who this week for the Packers is actually making a little bit of headlines because they found that if you go on his Twitter, all he does is talk about the candy and food that he eats all day long, every single day. They wonder why he can't lose any weight. So I'm going to give the Jamarcus Russell award to Derrick Henry. He's got a chance. Again, save yourself some money, young fella. Don't go out and eat yourself out of a job. Next award we're going to give to, the Fighting Irish Award. What's the Fighting Irish Award? Is it to the best white guy? No. This is to the team that is the most overrated team. Now, to be fair, this year, I thought Notre Dame was actually a phenomenal team. I really liked what they did. No, they're never as good as the media kind of portrays them to be, but they were very, very good this year. Sustained a ton of injuries and still battled back. Brian Kelly has done a very, very good job with that Notre Dame group. But we also know the history of Notre Dame football. And they have a team that's maybe at the edge of being a top 25 team. And everyone's like, hey, they're number three in my book. Are they? Because anytime they play a ranked team, they get beat. So we've seen years and years and going back to the Lou Holtz era where they rank these teams way too high for what they really are because the media knows if we put Notre Dame here, it'll get the people that love them on our side, and it'll get the people that hate them to come watch. The Notre Dame Award, the Fighting Irish Award, most overrated team. That now, you might be thinking Auburn Tigers. Think about the Auburn Tigers. They were the preseason number six. They went 7-6 and didn't even make a bowl game. If you watched Auburn at all this year, and I really liked Auburn going into the season, I liked quarterback Jeremy Johnson. He had looked so good in spot duty last year, coming in as a backup, that we kind of looked at him and said, well, when he's a starter, he's going to be a stud. Here's the thing that people don't always think about. Here's the thing that kind of tripped everybody up. Jeremy Johnson looked good when he came in and he did some rushing stuff and he was the rusher and he was kind of a change of pace instead of a passer. He came out and he ran and he, you know, darting around and picking up these first downs. The problem is when you're the starter, they can't really afford for you to play that way because if you get hit, you're knocked out of the game and now we're back to our backup. So they had to kind of, okay, you got to stay in the pocket. You can't really scramble. You got to make your reads. You got to make your throws. He couldn't play reckless like he had been playing. And as a result, he ended up looking horrible and getting benched. So Auburn is right there. Auburn has a chance to win the most overrated team award. But our winner has got to be Georgia Tech. And you look at Georgia Tech and you say, well, they were the preseason 15. Okay, a little bit lower. They were the favorite to win the ACC Coastal Division. Georgia Tech went 3-9 this year. They won just one game in conference. And you look at them and you say, okay, well, we all misread it. They just weren't that talented. Here's the problem. You know who their one win was against? They beat number 9 Florida State. So don't tell me they don't have talent. But as usual, Georgia Tech's defense was horrible. The only difference this year was their offense was actually kind of horrible too. So, hey, Georgia Tech, you truly were a wreck this year. They win our Fighting Irish Award. A few goodbyes we got to say. Just a few goodbyes. There's a few coaches that are stepping down. A few very, very good coaches that are stepping down. A guy like Minnesota's Jerry Kill, who kept having seizures and just had the health issues, had to step down. Very, very good coach. It's too bad that the game loses a coach like him. Texas State, You might have seen him back in the past. Dennis Franchione was a phenomenal coach for many, many years. He is retiring, just hit that age and is giving it up. University of Texas San Antonio, Larry Coker. You might remember him a little bit better when he was down at Miami, and had, you know, done big things at Miami. Coker went to University of Texas San Antonio, built a team literally from scratch. They didn't have a program before this, and made them at least respectable. Larry Coker is resigning, and he will give it up. Another good coach. Again, he might not get much credit, but Coker's a pretty good coach. We talked a little bit before, Virginia Tech, Frank Beamer. Here's my challenge to you. Find someone who doesn't like Frank Beamer. Everybody loves that guy. There's got to be something to be said for that. College football loses a great one in Frank Beamer. South Carolina, Steve Spurrier gave it up, and he has retired. We talked a little bit about that on the Daily Dose a few months back. But you know, the thing about Spurrier, he was so good for the game because you either loved him or you hated him. But he was great for the game. And finally, our last coach we have to say goodbye to, University of Southern California, Steve Sarkisian, who is staggering off into the sunset and is probably done with college football. Let's talk some NFL. Let's talk some NFL. Because speaking of coaches, there have been some coaching moves. And, you know, we've had some guests on lately. We haven't got to all these coaching moves. We got to break down some of these coaching moves for you in the NFL. Because there's been a few hires now in the NFL, I believe all of the coaching spots, all the vacancies have been filled. Let's start with the Cleveland Browns. The Cleveland Browns went and hired offensive coordinator from the Cincinnati Bengals, Hugh Jackson. Now, Hugh Jackson is a very, very aggressive play caller. If you remember, he spent some time in Oakland as the head coach. And when you look at it now, like when you looked at it then, you were like, oh man, they're going 7-9 and 8-8. He didn't do very good. You look at what he was coaching talent-wise and you go, no, actually, that was really good. That's pretty impressive that he got that many wins out of that horrible group. I don't know if you saw his press conference. Hugh Jackson totally went third person in the presser. He was like, well, Hugh Jackson is going to do this. And Hugh Jackson, really? Come on, Hugh. You're better than that. Don't go third person on us. But maybe he can turn things around in Cleveland. Probably not in that dump of a city. But hey, best of luck to Hugh Jackson. I hope he gets Cleveland back on track. He was already talking about, we don't know what management's going to do personnel wise, but we're going to do the best we can. Really? You're already doubting their personnel decisions? That's odd because they've done nothing but have great picks all the time. Hugh Jackson's going to be interesting in Cleveland. I'll say that. The Miami Dolphins went and hired, Chicago Bears offensive coordinator, former Denver Broncos offensive coordinator. He's been around the league with a number of the best quarterbacks. Adam Gase. Miami Dolphins pick up Adam Gase. He made Jay Cutler better this past season. Is he a good coach? Head coach? I don't know. It's a different situation. When you go from assistant like that, offensive coordinator, up to head coach, it's a different deal. Is he a good head coach? I don't know, but I want you to listen to me again because you might not have heard me the first time I said it. I want you to listen to me again. He made Jay Cutler better. Are you kidding me? Forget like making him head coach. You should make him like king of Miami. I mean, he made Jay Cutler better? Really? I didn't even know you could do that. The San Francisco 49ers, they made some noise. They went out and hired Chip Kelly. And the good thing, because I know what you're saying, oh good, he's going to bring in a bunch of white guys from Oregon. No. He's not going to wear the GM hat in San Francisco. They already have a GM, and that's huge. People forget that Chip Kelly won 10 games with the Eagles, and he didn't have a quarterback, which actually is a really good fit, because now he's going to San Francisco, and he still doesn't have a quarterback. So if anyone can win 10 games in San Francisco, what I'm saying is it's probably Chip Kelly. He's done it before. The Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Tampa Bay Buccaneers kind of made a weird move. I mean, they just abruptly fired Lovie Smith out of nowhere. And I don't know why. Lovie Smith had kind of gotten that team going. He had kind of gotten them playing a little bit better. They were starting to win some games. And they went and got Dirk Cutter. Cutter's kind of claim to fame, he was the offensive coordinator down in Tampa. His kind of claim to fame was that he fixed Matt Ryan in Atlanta. So I guess what we can expect from Tampa at this point is that Jameis Winston will put up huge stats and Tampa is going to be horrible every single year. I assume that's what's going to happen. The New York Giants. The New York Giants, fired Tom Coughlin after all those years. New York Giants went out and hired Bob McAdoo. Bob McAdoo was the NBA MVP in 1975 with the Buffalo Braves, and he also won two titles with the Los Angeles Lakers back in the 80s. You might remember, 6'9 player, he could shoot it from outside. Bob McAdoo was actually ahead of his time, a big man that could shoot from the outside. What? Ben? They hired Ben McAdoo? Who's Ben? I've never heard of Ben McAdoo. Bob McAdoo would actually be a better hire. I don't know who Ben McAdoo is. Never mind. Philadelphia Eagles. Philadelphia Eagles, they hire longtime Andy Reid assistant Doug Peterson. Yep, nice job, Big Rob. Doug Peterson. Listen to me again. The Eagles, who fired Andy Reid, who were so bitter with the job that Andy Reid did, they went and brought in who had been his assistant for years to replace Chip Kelly at this point. It's kind of funny when you think about it. The guy they wanted to get rid of so bad. Oh, we hate Andy Reid. Oh, yeah, his assistant. Yeah, we like him. Peterson promises that his teams will have all the competitiveness of Andy Reid, but half the calories, which is nice. Tennessee Titans. We save the best for last on this one. The Tennessee Titans. The Titans are easily. This isn't even close. They're the most boring team. Not in the NFL. You're sitting there going, oh, yeah, most boring team. Yeah, they're probably most boring team in the NFL. No. They're the most boring team in all of professional sports. Come up with a team more boring than that horrible franchise. They decided to keep interim head coach Mike Mularkey and name him head coach. Slow down, Titans. Pace yourselves. Don't blow all the sexy at once. The Titans went 2-7 under Mularkey. They were outscored by 124 points this season. Please tell me what possible redeeming factor he had, other than the fact that you're like, well, we can hire him because he's already here. We don't really have to go interview anybody. We can just, yeah, you want the job? Move on up. Then we don't have to do nothing. I'm not even joking about this. The Titans franchise should have that franchise pulled from the current ownership and sold to the highest bidder. They are absolutely, what they are going to do to poor Marcus Mariota is just absolutely obscene. I'm not talking about them anymore. We're moving on. Moving on. Let's talk about the divisional playoffs, because the divisional playoffs, we had some crazy games. We had some wild finishes. We had a couple really entertaining games. And now we've got the championship games coming up this Sunday. Some really, really good stuff coming up. First game of the weekend. The Patriots, the New England Patriots, beat the Kansas City Chiefs 27-20 in a game that, let's be honest, it probably wasn't as close as that score kind of indicates. Julian Edelman, wide receiver for the Patriots, he really changes that Patriots offense. They still can't run the ball, don't get me wrong. And Tom Brady gets hit too much, although they did do a better job of protecting him on Sunday. Here's the thing with Edelman. And here's the key as they go into this game against the Denver Broncos on Sunday. Brady knows, with Edelman in the lineup, he knows exactly where he's going with the ball, and he knows it very, very early. He gets rid of the ball quicker with Edelman in the pocket because he's not waiting for these backup receivers to try to get themselves open. He already knows, if Edelman runs this route, I know where he's going to be, I know he's going to be open, and I'm getting rid of this ball before I get decked for the 100th time this year. He changes the offense quite a bit. Kansas City, you could just see they weren't quite ready for prime time. I like that team. I like their efficiency. I like the way they play defense. But my goodness, Andy Reid has to be the worst clock management coach in the NFL. And I'm not talking right now. I might be talking about ever. They were down 14 with 2 minutes left to go, and the Chiefs were still huddling. They're still huddling. Not that they're getting to the line and they're hurrying and maybe they weren't going fast enough. No, they're actually still taking a huddle. Like, oh, what play should we run? I don't know. Why don't you wire something in and can we look at some pictures? Let's look at some pictures. I'm not sure which play we should run. Seriously? Did Andy Reid used to work at like the DMV? Is there no faster speed to him? He just is, well, let's call this play. I don't understand it. Kansas City, not quite ready for the big time, and New England bounced them. Yes, it looked like a 7-point game by the final score, but that felt like a 2-score game the whole game. The best game of the weekend, not even close, Saturday night, the Arizona Cardinals and the Green Bay Packers. That was a great game. Carson Palmer, playing in just his third postseason game, was not very good. I'm going to be honest. He kept turning it over. He threw two interceptions. He had a couple other interceptions dropped. You know, the Cards actually trailed for most of this game. I thought Arizona would blow this game out. The Cardinals actually trailed for most of this game. On the final drive, now, keep in mind, the drive previously, Palmer had thrown an interception in the end zone, or in the red zone at least. On the final drive, Palmer kept trying to turn it over again. Like, he kept throwing it to the other team. They just kept dropping it. Folks in Arizona, you could just feel, every time Palmer went back to pass, they were just like, oh, geez, don't let him throw an interception, please. The people in Arizona haven't been that nervous since MLK Holiday got pushed through. But he finally gets them into the end zone on a fluky, deflected pass that was caught for a touchdown. Under 2 minutes left to go in the game. You're sitting there going, okay, Arizona is going to, I mean, their defense is great. Green Bay has been kind of inconsistent with how they've moved. They should be able to lock this up. Green Bay comes out. They get to a 4th and 20. Somehow, Aaron Rodgers completes the pass. Somehow, they move the chains. 36-yard pass on 4th and 20. Now, on that 4th and 20 play, Arizona only rushed four guys. On the next play, on the next big play, it comes down to, what, 4 seconds left? 4 seconds left. You can tell Bruce Arians is sitting there going, look, we didn't bring enough pressure on the last one. We're bringing some people on this. We are going to make Aaron Rodgers get rid of this because there's 4 seconds left. This is the last play of the game. We're bringing people. He brought seven people. He brought seven pass rushers. The problem was that Aaron Rodgers actually gets away from it. He gets away from the pressure, and then this happened.
Rodgers in the shotgun, three receivers right, one to the left. Rodgers looks it over. Starks to his left. Now he moves Starks to the right side. Snap to A-Rod. Looking downfield, being flushed. Rolling left, winds up. Rainbows it high and deep into the end zone. It's high pointed and caught. It is caught for a touchdown.
Yes!
A miracle
yes!
catch.
Jeff Janis.
Janis caught
it.
In the end zone.
Can you believe it?
Unbelievable.
Believe it.
Jeff Janis. High point of the football in the middle of the end zone. And the Packers are an extra point away from getting this thing tied.
That call comes to us, compliments of the Packers radio network. Just an insane play. And you know, it's being thrown out there. I mean, was that a Hail Mary? I mean, he threw it. He knew where he was throwing it. I mean, he threw it to Jeff Janis. He saw that he had him, you know, at least in a situation where he thought he could make a play on the ball. He makes an amazing throw. Janis goes up and gets the ball. And somehow, with this game, it seemed like it was over. This game is headed to overtime. Should the Packers have gone for two? I know that that's being thrown around a lot right now. Packers should have gone for two. They had the momentum. They should have jumped on them. They should have went and gone for two. You have Aaron Rodgers. Here's my problem with that. And I understand it. And I understand it's really, really easy to say it now. For one, if he goes for two and they don't get it, you look like the biggest idiot ever. But here's the problem, and this is the way you think of it in coaching terms. I want to extend the game as long as I possibly can, unless I have like a set play that I go, I know we can score on this, and you never know. But I want to extend the game as long as I can, because let me just throw this out there. What if it goes into overtime and Arizona fumbles the opening kickoff? What if it goes into overtime and we return the kick for a touchdown? There's so many scenarios. I don't want the game to come down to one play. Remember, so many times in sports, so many times, it is not about who wins it. It is about who loses it. What if the other team does something that causes them to lose the game? Why would I have shortened the game when I could have extended it and allowed that to happen? So I know that's been thrown out there a lot. I wouldn't have gone for two. I would have kicked the extra point and gone into overtime. Problem was, in overtime, you know, Arizona gets the ball. First off, it's a weird coin toss. It wasn't a funky coin toss. There wasn't anything wrong. It was just weird. The ref flips the coin and didn't flip it. He just threw it up in the air and didn't turn. Arizona gets the opening kick. And you're sitting there again and you're looking at Carson Palmer and you're saying, you have not been great today. You have not been that good today. I'm not sure how much faith I have in you today. He scrambles around and he finds Larry Fitzgerald, who does the rest of it. For this play, we're going to go to the Cardinals' Spanish radio call. You've got to hear this one.
Nuestra carga, el equipo de Green Bay, quita de que le entregue el balón a su corredor. Carson Palmer a comprar tiempo, a lanzar, cruzado, de derecha a izquierda, atrapa Larry Fitzgerald en la 35. Larry de pie en la 50, Larry de pie en la 20, Larry de pie en la 10, Larry de pie en la 5. Larry, 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 Larry Fitzgerald. Espectacular ganancia de millones de yardas. El balón en la cinco.
Oh, that call is so good. That call from Cardinals Spanish Radio is so good. I want to just make out with it for a while. That is awesome. So Arizona, on two plays later, Arizona punches it into the end zone and they get the touchdown to knock out the Packers in overtime. Now, of course, we have to start hearing the, should we change the overtime rule? Because, and let's be honest, usually the NFL has it the smartest way, and then college football catches up and college football changes. That's not the case here. College football has it the smarter way, and the NFL is trying to catch up. Here's my feeling, and no, I don't feel bad for you, Packer fan. If you want to win the game, then stop the Cardinals. Stop, you know, 97-year-old Larry Fitzgerald from going the distance on you. Shut him down, and you win the game, probably, because Aaron Rodgers is probably going to get in the end zone the next time. So I don't feel bad for Packers. But I just feel like you've gone this whole game. Can we see both teams? I don't want the game to come down to a coin toss. I don't want to see you at the other team's 15-yard line or whatever stupid thing. You each get the ball. If we score on our first possession, you get the ball. It doesn't matter if it's touchdown or not. You have a chance to match us. It's baseball. Maybe the only thing that baseball has ever done right is both teams get that opportunity. I would like to see that. I would like to see you get, and we kick off to you, and you do whatever, and if you don't score, you don't score. But can you imagine if Arizona had scored on the first possession and Green Bay had a chance to match it? Green Bay had a chance to come, that would have been really, really compelling football. I know the NFL says we don't want these games to go any longer. Yeah, that's the last thing any of us want as Americans, isn't it? We don't want any more football. Yeah, we're trying to shorten these games up because we just don't want to see any more football. Change the rule. Both teams get a shot at it. Arizona gets a win. We're going to talk about how they're going to look in the championship in just 1 second. Carolina jumped on Seattle. They jump on the Seattle Seahawks 31-0 in the first game on Sunday. It was 31-0 at halftime. 31-0 at halftime. But of course, gritty Seattle, they battle back. And with just a few minutes left, with just a little over a minute, in fact, to go, they close the gap to 31-24. I mean, just sheer guts and determination from that Pete Carroll team. I mean, they deserve a lot of credit for just not quitting when it was 31-0. Of course, they also deserve a good amount of blame for being down 31-0. You're supposed to be the big dog. You're supposed to be the toughest team. You're supposed to be, we went back-to-back Super Bowls. We lost late to New England, but we're the toughest team. And you were down 31-0 at halftime. You get no credit. Get out of here. Suck it, Seattle. I'm sick of you. Okay, Denver. Denver Broncos had to come back to beat Pittsburgh 23-16 on Sunday. Peyton Manning was okay. He didn't get much help from his receivers. They dropped six passes. But as this team has done all year, they make plays when they have to. And they save their best plays and their biggest plays for the most crucial times of the game, it seemed like. The biggest key for Peyton Manning, though, no turnovers. You can win with defense. We've seen these teams. We've seen whether it was like a Jim McMahon with the Chicago Bears or a Trent Dilfer with the Baltimore Ravens. We've seen you don't have to be this great throw it all over the place. Just don't turn it over. Don't turn it over. Let your defense have a chance to win the game for you. And that's what, you know what, he did. Peyton Manning didn't turn it over. No, it wasn't pretty. No, it wasn't this gorgeous, you know, passing clinic. But they got it done. And somehow the Denver Broncos roll on. They get past, a little bit beat up Pittsburgh team, and they advance to the championship game. So now here are our championship games. The second game, actually, on Sunday will be Arizona at Carolina. That gets the late start. Carson Palmer is going to have to avoid that Carolina pass rush. And if he does, if he gets out of the pocket, he can find open people. He has receivers. He has talent. But he's going to have to get outside that pocket because that pocket is going to collapse on him pretty quick. Palmer is actually a little more athletic, I think, than people give him credit for. But if he can't get outside that pocket, the Cards are going to struggle because I don't think they can consistently run the ball against Carolina. On defense, you've got to contain Cam. If you don't contain Cam Newton, you're going to be in for a long day because he will keep making plays against you. Don't worry about sacks. Don't worry about your stats. Keep him in the pocket. And then you can probably cover those Carolina wide receivers. Those Carolina wide receivers aren't great. And sometimes, even when the ball's in their hands, they drop it. They drop it like Denver's receivers. If I had to make a pick here, I would say the Panthers. I'll pick them because they're at home. I'll pick them because they seem like they're one of the hottest teams going. I'll go Carolina. I think Carolina is going to the Super Bowl. Patriots versus Broncos. First game on Sunday. Patriots will be, pressing up. Their defense will come up. They're going to try to take away the run. They're going to dare Peyton Manning to beat them with his arm. And here's one thing that I wonder, and I don't know this. I don't have any inside sources. I just wanted this. You know how it seemed like Denver's offensive line kind of started to look like they were a little bit better with Brock Osweiler? They were firing out. They were getting some running yards. They were creating some lanes for runners to get in. Does it have anything to do with the fact that when Peyton Manning goes to the line, he stands at the line calling signals for about 15 seconds? Now, you might think nothing of that. But notice how many times he goes to the line, and instead of just a set go, they go. It's, hey, call this, and off, and eagle, and short, and Omaha. Meanwhile, your offensive line is sitting down in a stance all this time, and their legs are just getting dead. And then you wonder why they can't fire off the ball. Now, I'm just throwing that out there. I don't know, but if I'm down in a 3-point stance for 20 minutes every single snap, yeah, I'm going to lose some of that fire out of my legs. I don't know. Go up and snap it quick a few times. Let's just see what happens. If the Denver Broncos can run, then I think this is a game. Then I think Denver, you can open some things up. You keep your defense off the field a little bit. We saw that they were able to run the first time they played New England a little bit. Want to see if they can run the ball. Take some pressure off of Peyton Manning, allow him to do some play action kind of stuff, and allow him to have a little more time back in that pocket. If they can't run the ball on Sunday, a lot of pressure is going to go on this defense. Because Brady now has some weapons. He has Edelman. He has Gronk. He has Danny Amendola, who, by the way, we didn't talk about this. Danny Amendola should absolutely be suspended for the hit that he made on Jamel Fleming in that Kansas City game. I don't know if you saw this. There was a punt. Amendola was the punt receiver. And as Fleming came down to try to down the ball that Amendola wasn't going to catch, Amendola sticks his helmet right in Fleming's face, right in his face mask. I mean, he hit him like right in the jaw. If that's a defensive player hitting an offensive player, he's suspended, he's fined, Vontaze Burfict stuff, he's gone. But because it's Danny Amendola, well, probably because it's the Patriots, he's not going to get nothing. They'll fine him like $10 and say, hey, don't let that happen again. But he should absolutely be suspended for this week. That was a filthy play. That wasn't blocking. You can sit there and say, well, we're just blocking to protect the, you know, allow the ball to go in the end zone. That wasn't blocking. That was spearing another man with the crown of your helmet into his face. Anyways, the Patriots have weapons back. They have guys again. And if Denver can't run the ball, the pressure is going to go onto that Denver defense. I don't think that you can win this game if you get down by 2 scores, if you're down by 10, if you're down by 13. It's going to be tough for this offense to generate that many points. The Broncos defense has to get to Brady often. And you can't have the missed assignments that you did in your defensive backfield against the Pittsburgh Steelers. We saw a number of times, I know they were trying to play some zone with that Pittsburgh speed. You can't get away with that with this New England team. They will light you up if you have those missed assignments. You look at this game, everything on it says New England Patriots. Patriots are probably going to come into Denver and get a win here in Denver. They just have too much. If Brady is able to have time, if he is able to go to those targets quickly, he gets the ball too quick for the you know, Denver pass rush to get to him. You'd have to say the Patriots are definitely the favorite. Having said that, I'm not picking the Patriots because I can't stand them. I'm picking the Denver Broncos anyways. Sort of. Yes, I know it's an uphill battle, but I'm still picking the Broncos and I don't care. Doesn't have to make any sense. It's my world. You guys just live in it. We've got to get to, as we do every single week, our daily dose top five. You know, speaking of Tom Brady and Peyton Manning, you realize they have met 16 times in their careers. They've played 16 times. This will actually be the 17th time. Brady has won 11. Peyton has won 5. But in the playoffs, they're actually 2-2. You know, I started thinking about some of the other rivalries that we have in sports. some of those rivalries that are just, and not, I'm not talking about team rivalries. I'm not talking about, you know, the Red Sox and the Yankees or Michigan and Ohio State. I'm not talking about the, I'm talking about the individual rivalries, those individual rivalries. So today, our Daily Dose top five individual rivalries of all time. Number five on our list. I don't do it very often, but I'm going to go to the auto racing card. I know. I don't do it very often. Number five on our list has to be Richard Petty and David Pearson. You might be saying who? I don't know who that is. Let me clue you in. You've heard of Richard Petty. You've heard of Richard Petty. The King. You've heard of Richard Petty. But from 1963 to 1977, they finished first and second 63 times. And who held the lead? Who actually won most of those races? Not the King. Not Richard Petty. David Pearson beat Petty 33 of those times. Petty called David Pearson the greatest race car driver that he had ever seen in 1976. And you might not know this story. Maybe you're too young. Maybe you've never heard it. In 1976 at Daytona, these two were battling all day. They skidded out and kind of crashed on the final lap. Pearson actually got his car started and crawled his damaged car across the finish line. Petty couldn't get restarted. Crew members actually came out and touched his car and disqualified him. Petty crawls across driving at like 20 miles an hour to get the win. Now, you might sit there and think, did that really happen? Yeah, that's where all those movies get this from. You know, they both crash on the final lap and one car crawls across. That's where it all came from. Richard Petty and David Pearson. One of the greatest battles ever. That storyline has been used in movies 50 million times since then. It all came from 76 Daytona, Petty and Pearson. Number four on our greatest individual rivalries of all time has to be Wilt Chamberlain and Bill Russell. We talked about them a little bit earlier in the show too. This is the best big man rivalry in hoops history. Russell's Celtics won 11 titles. He has more rings than fingers. 11 titles. Wilt got just one with the Lakers. Wilt would get the points. I mean, Wilt averaged, think about this, Wilt Chamberlain averaged 45.8 points per game for his career. Not for one season, not for a half a season, not for three games, not for a playoff series, for his career. 46 points a game? Are you kidding me? But Wilt got the rings. Russell got the rings. And Russell got the rings with rebounding and with defense and with block shots and with controlling the paint. Russell and Chamberlain faced 142 times in their career, and Bill Russell won 85 of those. So definitely one of the great rivalries there. Number three on our list. I know. I'm going to play the golf card. Arnold Palmer and Jack Nicklaus. This was golf's biggest rivalry back in the 60s. They actually combined for 25 majors. And back in those 60s, when they were both going, Palmer won six and Nicklaus won seven. I mean, it was one or the other. You knew it was either going to be Palmer or it was going to be Nicklaus. Of course, then Palmer retired and Nicklaus went on to win, you know, 11 more. But at the time, Palmer and Nicklaus was one of the great rivalries in sports. Number two on our list, it's gotta be Muhammad Ali and Joe Frazier. They fought three times and all three fights are incredible. If you ever go back and watch these fights, all three fights were great. Here's the thing about this rivalry. You know, Ali had this situation where he would call Frazier all these derogatory names and he would make fun of them and he would say all these hideous things about Frazier. Frazier hated him. In fact, you might not know this, but in 96, Ali went up and he lit the torch at the Atlanta Olympics in 96, and they talked to Frazier about it, and they said, what were you thinking when you saw Muhammad Ali up there lighting the torch? And he said, if I'd have been up there, I'd have pushed him in. They still hate each other to this day. Frazier gave Ali his first loss in his first fight in 71. He destroyed Muhammad Ali's kidneys. They said Ali was never quite the same after that first fight. Ali wins the rematch, and then in the Thriller in Manila, it was a war. Ali won in the 14th after Frazier's corner stopped the fight. They stopped the fight because Frazier could no longer see. His eyes had swelled shut so bad that he could no longer see and he couldn't go on. So they stopped the fight. The only thing they didn't know, Ali was going to quit. He had told his corner, I'm quitting. Cut my gloves off. I'm done. He beat me. I'm out. But Frazier stopped it first. Ali wins. Ali and Frazier was a phenomenal rivalry. Number one on our list. What could be number one? What could be number one on our list of individual rivalries of all time? It's got to be Larry Bird versus Magic Johnson. You know, they met in the 1979 college basketball finals, and Magic's Michigan State squad beat Bird's Indiana State squad in that finals. Then they battled each other for 13 seasons in the NBA. The Celtics won 3 titles in that time. Magic's Lakers won 5 titles in that time. They actually faced each other 3 times in the finals. They actually played each other in the finals. Magic won 2 of those. You know, it's funny because they didn't like each other coming out. Larry looked at Magic. He's big city. He's big time guy. He's outgoing. Larry was very shy. He was very soft-spoken. He wasn't that way. He was a country boy. They actually got together to film a Converse commercial. And in order to film the Converse commercial, Larry Bird said he has to come to French Lick, Indiana, where he's from, to film this commercial because I'm not filming it otherwise. I'm not going to do it. Magic agreed, came to French Lick, and during that day, they kind of got to know each other. They kind of developed a friendship there, and they realized, you know what? We're really a lot like each other. We're both, you know, gym rats. We both just love the game. We're both good leaders. Both really, really competitive. But they actually found they actually had a lot more in common than they thought. It's funny. A lot of these rivalries ended up, maybe they didn't like each other at first. And with Ollie and Frazier, they still hate each other to this day. A lot of them actually developed a little bit of a friendship. They're going to see a great rivalry on Sunday as Tom Brady and Peyton Manning battle in probably the last battle of their careers, because I don't think you're going to see Peyton play anymore. Hey, next week, we will recap the NFL championship games. The Super Bowl teams will be set. Can you believe that? And you know, here at the Daily Dose, we get you ready for the Super Bowl like no other. Plus, we'll have some Pro Bowl talk. Okay, I'm joking about that part. We might talk a little Pro Bowl. But we will talk some NBA. We got to start talking a little bit of college basketball. And of course, we will always have our Daily Dose Top 5. Hey, you know, we've had a few guests appear on the show over the past few weeks. Going to have a few more guests. I went alone today. But going to have a few more guests coming up. And we're going to continue to mix it up. You never know what you're going to get when you have the Daily Dose here. If you get a chance, head over to iTunes. Give us a 5-star rating and a quick review. We would appreciate that so much. As usual, I have to say thank you to JSP. Could not do any of this without you. I will see you all next week. Have a great week, everybody.